You're listening to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig. In 2013, in a boatyard in Reedville, Virginia, in the United States, I came across an old, sun-bleached boat named Ave Del Mar. I learned that long before she became mine, she had sailed around the world. She's been through the Panama and Suez canals, has cruised in the sunny Mediterranean, and has rounded the infamous Cape Horn. Now she's begun a new journey, with me. I tell tales of the glory and the crushing heartbreak of sailing, and I talk to some of the wonderful characters that I meet along the path as Ave Del Mar and I sail the world together. Time goes forward, go and catch your jet, you will find your moment. Time goes forward, stay and have a sniff, let's dream about the future. Welcome to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig, coming to you from the Intracoastal Waterway in North Carolina, specifically the Pungo River Inlet on the east coast of the United States, heading home with a question mark. I don't know. Home is wherever I am. I remember years ago asking my friends Chip and Tammy when they were cruising. I said, do you feel like you're always home or like you're never home? And I don't think they had a clear answer to that. And I don't think I have a clear answer to that either. Home will always be where I was born, Kansas City, Missouri, in my grandmother's house in the bathroom in 1964. Home will also always be Washington, D.C., where I spent most of my life, including those formative years of my early teens. And home is also Ave Del Mar and wherever she is. So I also find that question unanswerable. And that's about how I answer it when people ask me where I'm from. Unless they're from someplace close to one of those places I'm from. Whew, what a sentence that is. Anyway, back to the ditch. So, after coming back from Jamaica, making landfall in the States down in the Florida Keys, sailed outside in the Gulf Stream up to West Palm, from there outside in the Gulf Stream up to Charleston, from Charleston out in the stream again up to Southport, North Carolina, specifically Oak Island, but the Southport Cape River Fear Inlet, visited my mother, and from there up to Ave Del Mar's soon-to-be temporary home in the Chesapeake Bay. We're staying inside. To go back outside into the Atlantic would certainly be a freer, I don't know if I was going to say more relaxing, but that's not true. But a more efficient and in ways easier slog north. But that takes me out. The Gulf Stream veers off. I'm without the current to help me. I've got around Hatteras. There aren't a lot of good options for bailing out and making landfall if something goes wrong. So it was my choice to stay inside, stay in the Intracoastal Waterway, and enjoy the protection of the inland waters, easy anchorages, and the like. But it's funny, it occurs to me as I do this how very, very different this experience is from when I did it the first time about 2 years ago. Let's talk first about anchoring. I recall a couple of years ago on my trip south, and I'd lived on the boat already two and a half years, whatever it was, but had really never anchored. I lived in marinas. I was actively trying to learn my boat, repair my boat, improve my boat, and pick up some skills, but anchoring was not yet among them because I wasn't underway. So getting underway, anchoring was perhaps not traumatic, but fraught with doubt and a little bit of terror and a lot of self-questioning. First time I anchored was the first time I tried to leave with my son, just shy of 2 years ago, in Back Creek in Annapolis after we attempted to leave, but there was too much fog, so we came back, but didn't want to go back and redock in my slip in the marina, so we anchored out in Back Creek in 10 feet of water, soft mud bottom, no breeze, no traffic, no nothing. I probably could have just stopped the boat and thrown a coffee can overboard and she wouldn't have moved. Wasn't much skill to that one. But after that, I was underway, and I was underway solo, and anchoring was a big part of that. First time was up near Solomon's. I was so proud when I actually got the boat anchored coming south. Most of those anchorages were without trauma. I did in North Carolina, in between Topsail and Surfside, what is it, Surfside Beach, pulled into an anchorage that I immediately regretted attempting to achieve. The thing about North Carolina in that particular section is it's just long, long, straight stretches of water with absolutely nowhere to go. I've often described it as being similar to perhaps traveling on a long, straight highway where there's no shoulder on the side of the road, no grassy median in the middle, and guardrails on both sides. You're on it. You've got to keep going. There's nowhere to pull over in your car to the side of the road and put the brake on and nap. Those options just don't exist. So you've got to pick from whatever few slim options there are. And speaking of slim, getting into that anchorage that I was immediately regretting was tough. And pardon my distraction, I'm looking at my chart because I think the color markers just reversed. You can hear a lot of noise. Oh yeah, that's red to my right. Look at that, you know? So I keep these little red and green clothespins clipped to a cleat that's in the cockpit of my boat so that as the markers around me sometimes reverse, I don't have to think. I can just look down at the clothespins if I've been smart enough to adjust them and know which side to keep those markers on. In general, when you're southbound in the Intracoastal Waterway, the red markers will be to your starboard and the green markers to port. But sometimes, because the waterway is itself not one continuous waterway, it's a collection of passages through rivers, canals, sounds, inlets, bays, whatever it may be. So sometimes there are navigational markings that are superseded by other traffic, where if you were returning into an inlet, perhaps from the ocean, the markers have to be a certain way, and that will supersede what they give you for the Intracoastal, so they sometimes reverse. Back to my story. So I was pulling into this anchorage 2 years ago, and it was just shallow, shallow, shallow. I crept, snaked my way through this odd little creek-like inlet to get to the anchorage. The anchorage itself was fine. I was in, I don't recall, 8-10 feet of water, nothing to write home about. Enjoyed it. It was the first time I recall on my trip south that when I pulled up the anchor, it was clean, and I was so very, very excited. However, the inverse of that means that I'm now about to start pulling up mud with the anchor again, which is never fun. But I was anchored in that same anchorage this year on my way north, although I didn't go all the way back in. There's a little spot on the side of the creek outside of the channel where you can anchor, and it shows that it's about 8 feet of water. I decided to do that. I'm making, because this trip is in summer and my trip south was in winter, the days are a lot longer, and I'm making, in general, longer passages every day. I'm much more relaxed. It's much easier for me to do this. Fewer things traumatize me in the course of the day. So I pulled into this generally same anchorage this year on my trip north. Didn't go all the way in. Anchored in this 6, 7, 8 feet of water, whatever it was, and decided I was pretty happy with it. And lo and behold, a squall came through. Nothing big. It lasted a little less than an hour and was probably blowing right in the neighborhood of 30, which isn't a whole lot of wind. But 30 is plenty of wind at anchor to kind of stretch out your road, pull that chain taut, and push your boat a little farther than it would just naturally go based on currents. Or a normal, say, 8 to 12 knot wind. So as Ave got pushed, it got pushed up into the shallows on an ebb tide, so the tide was flowing out. And lo and behold, she ended up aground. I was aground one time 2 years ago, and it was one of the worst days of my trip south. I thought I'd ruined the boat. I thought it was going to sink. I recall calling my sister on the phone, telling her that that was the end. Apparently, I'm very melodramatic. But of course, that wasn't the end. The damn boat just floated again when the tides came back. So funny that this time I couldn't even tell I'd run aground until I was leaning out of the cockpit trying to scoop up some water and realized I couldn't reach the water. But the boat hadn't yet listed heavily off to one side, so I hadn't really picked up on it. But it was certainly soon clear that there was a lot less water under me than there should be. And about 4, 5, 6 hours later, Ave was keeled over pretty hard. It was really tough to walk through the boat. She was at a pretty severe angle. And it's so funny. I just sat there going, okay, well, you know, the tides giveth and the tides taketh away. So the giveth part's going to come back eventually. And I was texting with a friend of mine who was asking me what I was going to do. I said, I'm going to wait for high tide, catch the boat off. I'll just kind of pull her forward with the anchor chain. And if that doesn't work, I'll wait for the next high tide. And if that doesn't work, I'll wait for a full moon or a new moon high tide. And eventually the boat will float. And I probably have about a month worth of food on the boat. As long as I want to keep eating beans and rice, I could probably live for maybe even longer than a month. So I wasn't very worried about it. And the next morning I woke up, she was still kind of keeled over, but less so as the morning went by. Eventually by early afternoon, she was kind of upright again. We catched her off, took off, and boy, if there's one thing I've learned in the years of doing this now, which I understood intellectually before, but now I understand practically, is just take what it's given you and don't try to make it give you something it's not given you. So that day, got out of that anchorage somewhere between 2:30 and 3, had like a 15-mile sail north, ended up in a great little anchorage, was farther north at the end of the day than I was at the beginning of the day, and that's a success in my book. So I'm up against a break here. I'm going to step away, listen to something, and come right back. This is Postcards from Sea.
Bonnie Last Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Last is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Last Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielastcharters.com.
Hi, I'm Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost Magazine, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
You're listening to Postcards from Sea. I'm John Herlig. And the sounds you hear in the background, let's see here. One of those is my jib luffing. One of those would be the wind blowing. One of those sounds would be the engine purring like a kitten. You'll probably hear some grunts from me while I try to steer the boat. Maybe a few curse words because I like words and I try to use all of them. Where was I? We're talking about anchoring a minute ago. And another thing that occurs to me is boat traffic and the contrast between boat traffic and how I interacted with it on my way south a couple of years ago versus how I interact with it on my way north now. And let me tell you something. If you want to get good at two things, those two things being encountering other traffic and dealing with drawbridges, go to Florida. You want to talk about boot camp. Holy moly. Spend a year in South Florida. In Florida, you know, you're a complicated state. I used to not really like you, but then I spent some time in West Palm Beach, made some of the best friends of my life down there, had some amazing experiences. I found the counterculture, I found the hippies, I found the vegan restaurant. I found all the good that was down there. And so I have a hard time saying I don't like you anymore, Florida, but dear Lord, are you one complicated damn state? It seems to me that there's this thing in Florida that happens where when you turn about 23, they just give you a sport fish boat with a lot of power. They then lobotomize you and send you out to go fish. This is my impression of Florida. And you fly around in that damn boat, throwing 8-foot wakes. And I don't know if you don't care or if you just really don't understand, but it really is boot camp. There's just so many people, so much boating culture, so many cavalier boaters who boat at the peril of those who do it responsibly, like the friends I made down there. So anyway, this is not an anti-Florida statement. I'm just saying that there are more boating or shall we say boat-to-boat challenges in South Florida than anywhere I have experienced. So, and drawbridges. There's a drawbridge about every 50 feet. As soon as you get through one, you got to call the next one, call the next one, call the next one, call the next one. And those are both good exercises because I recall when I was heading south, it was December. I was way late. Everyone else had already gone south, you know, which is about right for me. I don't tend to do what everyone else is doing or when I'm supposed to do it. So I was coming south and just never saw any boats. I don't literally think I saw another sailboat underway for 2 or 3 weeks. And I was leaving Annapolis, the self-proclaimed sailing capital of America, which is not a discussion I'm trying to have. So please don't send me comments arguing that Newport is or that San Diego is, because I don't really care. But just didn't run into any boats. And it wasn't until maybe North Carolina that I started to encounter fishing boats. And I don't mean big commercial fishing boats, just guys in skiffs out running around fishing or going to and from their duck blinds. Lots and lots and lots of duck blinds. So that means lots of people in little boats going to the duck blinds so they can sit in the duck blinds and shoot ducks that aren't blind. Yeah. So each of these little fishing boats, little skiffs, little 12-foot skiff, some guy sitting in the back motoring along and smoking a Marlboro. And each of those was just trauma to me 2 years ago. I was like, where's he going? What's he doing? Am I doing the right thing? Does he see me? Do I need to call him? And, yeah, it's, you know, the only way to get better at things like that is to get experience. And the only way to get experience is to get the heck out there and do it. And that just kind of cracks me up when I look back at it. So after that, I call it a year. I guess it was 8 or 9 months in South Florida and all the boats and all the traffic. My perception of the other boat traffic I see here and how to interact with it is so very, very different. I know when I was interviewing Larry Weber, my crew who sailed with me from Jamaica back to the States, we were talking about commercial traffic out in the seas and how so many people really hate seeing commercial traffic, and I kind of like it. I don't want to hit it. Those are the ones that can kill you. Quite frankly, if I run into a little fishing skiff or probably even another sailboat like mine, it won't be fun. There's going to be some damage, but it's not going to kill me. Running into those commercial ships can kill you, but they pretty much all show up on AIS. Even if they're asleep when you call them, they'll eventually wake up and answer. And they're very predictable. They don't move quickly. So you can get out of their way, and they're not going to dramatically alter course unless it's at your request. And it's really not typically viewed that it's for the smaller boats to request anything from the bigger boats. So I like those. Meanwhile, it's not at all been unpleasant to see traffic on the ICW northbound this time. Another boat here, another boat there, someone to pass. I think I used to call every boat that I saw, asking them to give me a slow pass. And although getting waked by a sport fish right now would still sort of knock me silly for a minute, and I'm not that well stowed. Ave is not in blue water condition below decks right now. It, you know, even if I got severely waked, maybe a couple of pots and pans would go flying. Nothing bad's going to happen. So it's a very interesting exercise to go past those boats, see them, see myself not calling them, thinking that their wakes really aren't all that much. I haven't been in 30-foot seas out in the ocean, but I've certainly been in enough seas that the wake from that boat going the other way just doesn't really faze me so much anymore. So as a result of the anchoring, the passage making, and the other boats, this northbound trip that I'm on right now has been so very, very relaxed. Not too wound up about protocols on the boat. I do what I have to do, take care of the engine, take care of fluids, take care of food and myself and route planning and the log and all those things. Oh, you know where the word log comes from? I bet most of you might well know this, but I think this is fascinating. So way back in pirate days, ship's speeds were calculated by throwing a log overboard. It had a line attached to it, and there were knots every whatever distance in that line tied into the line. They would throw this log overboard, and over a specific, like checking someone's pulse, over a specific period of time, they would count how many knots go out on this line. Oh, there's the radio. Coast Guard chirping in the background. They would count how many knots go out in this line in a specified period of time, call it 30 seconds, whatever it may have been. Like I said, I don't know, I wasn't there. And so that's how we get knots as speed. And then they would record this speed and their progress in the log book. And that's how we get both knots and log. How about that? Now all of a sudden it's an etymology podcast. Boy, that's one scratchy radio call coming through. Anyway, yeah, I have no idea what I was talking about. But this has been a most relaxing trip north. Plenty of daylight. I don't have to put on 9 layers of clothes. It's not 20 degrees Fahrenheit when I wake up in the morning. There's no frost on the boat. And life is pretty good. So today we'll be going through the alligator... What is it? The Pongo River Canal? I don't know. Here's a little segue, which I'm sure is shocking to you all. One of the things about single-handing is sometimes you'll hear someone on the radio, and they'll say, sailing vessel outside of Crab Creek Inlet, you know, this is so-and-so, come back. And I'm sitting there, single-handing, trying to steer my boat. My route is charted. I have no idea where Crab Creek Inlet is, or Dog Hammock Spit, or any of these things. So I'm staring at my chart. The boat's swirling around in circles, and I'm looking for, because I have no idea if that boat they're calling is me or not. And that happens a lot. So sometimes I answer, sometimes I don't answer. Sometimes it's me, sometimes it's not. But single-handing is a different ball of wax. Well, that's the sound of me being distracted because I'm heading for the wrong marker. Hello, Red. You're my wrong Red. So apparently podcasting and sailing is a lot like texting and driving. I don't know. It's all right. I haven't hit anything yet. 12.2 feet of water under the keel. So I think we're okay. I need 5.5. So, yeah, we're still in North Carolina now. Going to head up to the Alligator River tonight. From there, up into and past the Outer Banks towards Norfolk. And from that, we're a couple of days from Reedville. And Ave will be back at her home where I found her 4 years ago. So, Intracoastal Waterway, a much more relaxing exercise this time than it was 2 years ago. I love thinking back to the questions that Mike McDowell asked me when he interviewed me a couple of years ago. And it's fun to see the growth. I got a long ways to go, but Ave and I have put some miles behind us. And so far, despite all the trauma, overall I'd say they've been successful miles. So a little bit shorter show today than many of them are because I don't have someone that I'm blabbing with, but I wanted to check in, tell you about the trip. It is a beautiful day. I haven't had cell phone service in 2 days, which makes me very happy to be this close to beautiful North Carolina backwater, that kind of marshy land. There's nothing like it. It's absolutely gorgeous, peaceful, serene. It smells good, it looks good, and it sounds good. It's a beautiful place to be. So with that, I'm going to wrap. No, not like a rapper. W-R-A-P, like wrap up the show. You'll never hear me rap. Thanks to Mike McDowell and Boat Radio for hosting the show. You are awesome. Thanks to D Imperfection for my theme song. You guys rock. And thanks, as always, to everyone who listens. Thanks for the notes. Thanks for the cold beers. Thanks for the comments. You guys are great. Without you, there is no podcast. I'll be back soon with a new show. And until then, be well and be happy.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.